Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or Apple Podcasts, or as always, head on over to the website, AmericaOutLoud.com, and please share those on social media. It helps us out a great deal. Once again, we have a lot to talk about tonight, Rob. We've got on Colonel Julie Hall, who will be discussing a run in Congress in Massachusetts in 2020. We'll find out what her plans are for the future and get her thoughts on a lot of current events. We are really excited to talk to her and all of her experience. What we are seeing in the Biden administration early on, Rob, with our military is very concerning with all these woke ads, the transgenders, reassignment surgery. And then you look at China and Russia, and they are deadly serious, their military ads. It's just a complete woke disaster from what I am seeing, Rob. And that is not what I like to think of when I think of our great United States military. How about you, Rob?
I agree, Andrew. I think this whole woke atmosphere is a bit overrated. If you're not woke yet, I mean, what the heck are you doing? Why are you sleeping? And the push to, I guess it seems, diversify our military. I mean, I've been reading about the military, and little did I know that the military is the only, I guess, profession or place whereby you can pick and choose who you want to serve because you're looking for the fittest soldier. We don't want people that are there that have a history of psychological problems, high blood pressure. I don't think there's anything wrong with that if that still exists. We don't want people that are there that aren't ready to serve. In other words, the military isn't like a garden party. We're not there going to have a garden party and tea and hold our little pinky finger up and then try to decide, am I a male? Am I a female? Well, again, I keep saying, pull down your pants, folks. There's your answer there. Follow the science, biology, 101. So this whole push to change the military and change the colors, and we can allow the Pride Parade flag to be in the military and fly it above the embassies. And this has got to stop. It really has to stop, Andrew. We're the United States of America. We are united. We've got to be united. We need to walk lockstep and look for the mission and accomplish the mission. We have women in the military. We have men. We have all groups of people in the military. But when we start trying to like create these identities within the military, we lose. And as you mentioned, you look at China. China is not playing. We need to wake up and wake up fast. Look at Russia. They're not playing. So while we're trying to be woke and create all of these advertisements to attract all these different groups and to make it seem as if though, you know, we're open, we're this. As someone said once before who came on our show, that when you're in that foxhole, you're not concerned about the person's sexuality. You're not concerned about the person's color. You're looking at or thinking, does this person have my back? Can I count on this person? And that's the way it should be. And all this other stuff, get rid of it. I mean, completely get rid of it. I don't know what Joe Biden is thinking. At some point, unfortunately, and we just have to be serious about this, there will be another war. And we won't be prepared if we're busy trying to lower our standards. Well, women can't do 20 push-ups, so let's just reduce it to 5. I'm sorry. Everyone needs to be able to do 20 push-ups. And that's just a number I'm throwing out there. Well, women can't do this because... No, no, no. It is the military. We need soldiers. Be it male or female, we need soldiers. So I'm glad we have coming on tonight, Colonel Julie Hall. I mean, this woman has, I read her bio, a little bit about her bio. She's retired now, but she's worked her way up. She's from a large family, 7 kids, I think. And she saw her mom and dad working hard. So they instilled in her those values. And with all of that, she decided to give back to the country and serve in the military, I think for 30-plus years in the Air Force, 1 of 7 kids giving back. And then she decided to give back yet again to the Earth Society, to the country, by running for office in 2020. Now, she hasn't made up her mind for 2021. If she has, she can make that announcement here on our show, After Dark with Rob and Andrew. But I'm glad to have her on because I want to get her insight, Andrew, on some of the things that we're being faced with in our culture, in our society, definitely the things that involve the military. I also want to get her thoughts on the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. And my humble opinion, he's a bureaucrat. I mean, someone else might differ. I don't know. But without further ado, let's just bring her on so that we could talk to her, have this whole hour, and get as much in as possible. So, Colonel Julie Hall, how are you tonight?
First of all, I want to thank you, both Andrew and Rob, for having me on. I'm very honored to be here and very interested in talking about some of these issues that you're bringing up. I came into the military, as a matter of fact, in the 70s, and there were not a lot of women in the military when I came in. So this is a discussion that is near and dear to my heart. When I came into the military, women were not allowed to go into combat. And there were a number of reasons that were brought up as to why that was not possible. A lot of the same reasons that are being discussed now, the requirements, you can't carry a 50-pound gun, you can't do this, you can't do that. And also the discussion about women not being able to become pilots and flying airplanes was brought up. And I have to tell you, a lot of the reasons were not based on what I would call physical capabilities. And I want to bring this up because as further on in my career, as I went through my enlisted career, I then became an officer, then became a commander. And in my leadership capacity, my most and number one priority was to get the mission complete and get people through their mission safely and to not have anything that would compete against that mission. Never compromise the commission, never compromise the mission. So what you're saying is absolutely correct. You have to make sure that the mission comes first and everything else comes second. Now, secondary, I was a medical officer. So what you're also saying, and it's going to come into play as we discuss some of these issues about physical capabilities and whether somebody is physically capable to continue on in their capacity is going to come into play when we talk about people being transgender or any other kind of medical condition that they have. And I'll talk a little bit about asthma, something as simple to control in the outside world as asthma caused a problem in the military. So let's look at those two things. So as I moved through the military, and we did have the discussion about, you know, pilots and so forth, you know, one of the things they were saying is that, you know, women could knock it in an airplane and push that little stick. That's what I used to say, push that little stick. And I'm like, so how much energy does it take to push that little stick? Okay. So this is the kind of discussions we had. The men did not want the women in their environment, bottom line. But as technology moved along, the metal that was used in some of those weapons became lighter. So those requirements to carry a 50-pound or to pull a 50-pound weight was not a requirement anymore. So as those requirements changed, the media picked right up on it and they said, they're lowering the standards for women. Absolutely untrue. Absolutely untrue. They were making the standards more in line with what reality was. And so I want to make that perfectly clear that they were not lowering standards for anyone. And me as a commander would never, ever condone the military doing that. That is an absolutely wrong thing to do because when you do that, people die. And I'll just say it like that. So I would never as a leader ever condone the United States military doing something of that sort. Now, the other thing is, and as a commander, I also had difficulties as they allowed more women to stay in the military and they wanted to keep families together. That was difficult for me. I'll be honest. Having pregnant women in the military was difficult because when somebody went away for 9 months, you didn't get a replacement. So you were out of having a replacement or an extra a body, if you would, to do that mission. And the whole unit took on that responsibility. But you learned that you wanted to keep good people and in order to keep good qualified people. So the military changed again, the culture changed again. And those women that were in the military and having children, they knew that they could get deployed, and they knew that they would have to leave their children. So if you think about it, it was quite a sacrifice for those women also. They made a commitment, a very, very difficult commitment, that I know that I'm going to have this lifestyle. I want this lifestyle. I want to bring my family into this. And I really do know what the repercussions of this is. And I'm willing to do this. I'm willing to put my life on the line, knowing that I might leave a child at home because my country means that much to me. So this is the type of individual that you are going to find in the military that you may not find anywhere else. And I think, you know, for those things, people need to understand that these are some of the decisions that get made and the mindset of some of these people. So it's not just an easy decision in this culture.
You know, I've often thought about that, Julie, as to how moms and fathers too, but definitely moms who've carried a child for 9 months in the military, and then to make that decision, I've had my child, I get to bond with them for, I guess, a couple of weeks, but then I have a mission that I have to fulfill. Like, how do they do it? I can't wrap my arms around that. I mean, it takes a really committed person to be able to do that. I mean, you carried this child for 9 months, and now you've got to go to your mission. And sometimes we've heard stories of mothers not coming back home for like 6 months. They've seen the child, you know, on video. Now, thankfully, we have video. But before then, mothers that did it served their country faithfully. I take my hat off to you, Colonel. I take my hat off to you. And thank you for your service.
Yeah, and luckily, you know, I was in a medical career field, and a lot of the medics did go. It was later on. Originally, you know, the medical career field, we were support. And as time went on and later on in my career, they started to send the higher ranking medics to Afghanistan to set up hospitals. And all of that, you know, was kind of thrown aside. Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention said, hey, we're medics. We're just out there support. We're out here helping people. We wore this big red cross, and the big red cross was supposed to be, don't shoot us. We used to laugh about it all the time. We used to say, no, that's the big red target, you know, that we wore, like we're out there. So, you know, all of that went by wayside. There is no Geneva Convention anymore. Everybody that's there is a combatant. And, you know, men, women, it doesn't matter anymore. You're all out there and, you know, you're all a target and you're all doing the same mission. I do want to jump back just a little bit back again and let people know that even when I came in, we all knew who was gay. We all knew members of the military way back even in the 70s. And there was even a culture back then that a lot of people don't know, that a lot of gay people came into the military to meet each other, truly.
Really?
Yes. Yes. And I had some friends that were gay, and what they told me was California was the gay gateway to the West. And on the East Coast, where I was stationed, Malcolm Grow Medical Center in Washington, D.C., was the gay gateway to the East. So they would meet each other there. And those were the bases that they tried to get stationed at. Now, I'm just hearing this from, you know, one of the people that I knew that was gay at the time. And sure enough, they all knew each other.
So why has it become so political? Because no matter where you go in life, you're going to have different backgrounds. You're going to have gay people here. You're going to have straight people. So how did it became so political during the, I think it was the 90s when Clinton became president, as to don't ask, don't tell? I'm like, but it exists.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they took it on as to be something that, and this is what's interesting, because we all we sort of saw this happening, and our sort of inside, I don't want to call it a joke, but our inside mantra about this was don't ask, don't tell, because we already know. I mean, and we wondered the same thing, like, what's this all about? And it only made it worse. Just the way you see some of these, what I would consider some of the ethnic things that are going on right now, some of the racial things that are going on right now, in my opinion, is making things worse. Like whoever said to you that they count on this person, when you count on a person that's standing next to you for your life, you know, that trust builds very, very quickly. That fear goes away very quickly when you have to trust in that person. And every day that you get up and you work with that person, after a while, that person just becomes a person that you see every day. And so when people ask me, well, how would you change things? I would say it's exposure. It's exposure. The thing that we don't have here in the United States, when we all group into our little cultures and our little worlds, is we don't have exposure to each other. We are not forced to reach across the table and hold each other's hand every day. We get to stay in our own little worlds. But when you're forced to be exposed to each other, to work with each other, things change pretty quickly. I don't know how you recreate that environment outside of the military, but you know, it sure did work in the military. Now people will tell you all of a sudden, and you talked about, you know, the new regime in the military. Oh no, it's been here forever. It's been, you know, racism. I'm not going to deny that there's, you know, probably people inside the military that bring their own biases in with them, and people aren't going to change their minds. But for the most part, that's the first time that I ever saw interracial marriages. And when I say interracial marriages, I'm talking not just black, white, I'm talking everything, because people in the military went all over the world. And the different mixtures of ethnicity that I saw was just amazing. Amazing.
So you would think that, you know, as you said, in the military, you're exposed to so much, whereas other people aren't. So they bring those political biases to the table and they try to push them on everyone else. When, as you said, we already know that they're gays in the military. We're already sleeping beside or talking to blacks, white, Indians, Muslims, or whomever, you know, but outside of that, it's not there. So now you have these individuals who are trying to be woke and they're pushing their agenda and making it all political. And as you said, Colonel, it makes it worse because now you're creating a situation, making people hate each other by saying, oh, but they're thinking this, and they're not. They're just being people. Simple as that.
That's correct. I am just sort of watching this and I don't know what to say about it, to be quite honest with you. I can look and I can say when I get asked as a, you know, political figure, what do you think about it? And they say, systemic racism. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. Systemic racism. Do you believe there's systemic racism? I say, no, I believe there's flat out racism. I mean, I've seen racism, systemic racism. You know, I understand what you're trying to say, that there's, you know, different things that have happened, but it's a lot easier to deal with actual racism. If you've seen actual racism happen, then yes, you can reach in and you can try to make some changes to them. But part of the other thing is these words that people are coming up with and making up these words. And I'm like, okay, you can make up these wonderful words. I mean, I just, there's certain words that people come up with and I'm like, okay, I have no idea. I don't even think they know what they mean sometimes, what they're saying. That's another difficulty that I think people are having, is they, you know, these words that people are making up and or coming up with, and a lot of people don't even understand what they are. And I listen, when you go into the military, we have words that we make up that nobody knows what they are. Why? Because we don't want anybody to know what we want to be cool. Okay. We want people to, that's our culture, you know? So we have these words that only we know what they are. Every group does this. And it's unfortunate because when we talk about something as important as race, everybody has got to be on the same sheet, and we're not.
So, Colonel, how did you find military life then compared to today? Did you see a huge shift in what's happening? The people that they're bringing in or want in compared to you, like you said, you were there for 30 years. Is there a change?
Well, if you look at it, it is an all volunteer military, and that makes a huge difference. And you alluded to this a little bit. So when it is an all volunteer military, they can pick and choose the best of the best. And they're supposed to pick and choose the best of the best. And that's what they should continue to do. So when they screen somebody, they should be medically cleared. And I'm going to use that word, medically cleared. The medical clearance now has changed. And that has changed because everybody has to deploy. They have to be deployable. It used to be that people could get what's called a waiver. And they would say, oh, you can have a waiver. We'll put you at a desk job. And other people said, well, how come they get a desk job? I have kids at home. I'd love to have a desk job. And what you were finding is people were finding ways to get waivers so that they didn't have to deploy. I mean, who wants to put themselves in harm's way? Well, some people do, but because they enjoy that. But, you know, and there's money involved. So here's the big thing. When you deploy, and this is why it was unfair for women not to deploy. When you deploy, you get a ribbon or a medal, and those ribbons and those medals go to your promotion. Promotion goes to pay. If you don't have the opportunity to earn a ribbon or a medal, then you do not have an equitable opportunity for promotion. So when women were not allowed to deploy, women did not have an equitable opportunity as men for promotion. So that was a big, big problem for me when I was a commander. And when people say, how come women, you know, want to go into, you know, why would you want women to go to war? And I'm like, because that's the reason I came in the military in the first place, was I felt that this would be the place that I would be treated the most equitable in any place that I went to work in the United States.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I never knew that. Again, we're civilians and we hear all these stories, but we don't, what you're telling us right now, and I'm sure some of our listeners never knew that either. Now, just going back a step back, you said that everyone has to be deployed. When did that change? Because like you said, there was like a waiver that you could get. And I didn't know that people would do the waiver just to get the desk job so that they didn't have to deploy. And when you say deploy, does it actually mean that you're going to see combat or what happens exactly?
Yes. There were different. So there were different types of deployments that you could go on. But for the most part, a deployment, when you deploy, it's called, you have to, it really comes down to wearing this gear, okay? This combat gear. When you deploy now, what you're really looking out for is biological. That's the crust of it. Think about what you just said about China. All right. Think about Iran, Iraq, all of those places. We're worried about nuclear. We're worried about biological. That is the biggest concern, I think. I mean, nuclear, you know, if somebody drops a bomb, that's the least of your worries, okay? But if somebody wants to, you want to maim, no, I'm going to be graphic here, but I'm going to say it the way it is. The way to actually destroy your enemy is to destroy their heart and their soul. And when you send your enemy back wounded, what does it do to the rest of the people there? It scares them. It psychologically destroys them. And that's what you're trying to do more than anything else. So, you know, when you have a biological weapon to use where you're just harming them, I mean, look at what COVID did to everybody. It scared the bejesus out of everybody. Think about it, a whole, you know, population. So when you have something like that happen, that's going to be a problem. So when we go and we deployed, we want to find ways of technology to keep that from happening. In particular, these masks, and the masks have to fit properly over your face, which is why the men have to shave properly. And so people that had beards, that's why you can't have a beard. It used to be that, you know, guys in the Navy could wear beards all the time. You don't see a lot of military. That's why they're clean shaven. They can do it when they're on leave, but they got to shave that off because you cannot keep a really tight seal when you have a mask on. So anybody that can't wear a mask now, asthma, people with asthma can be treated very easily, you know, with a little inhaler, but you cannot be deployed and expect to bring an inhaler with you and be in that mask for hours and hours on end and not be able to use your inhaler. So you cannot deploy. And if you cannot deploy, then you are not fit to be in the military. I hope that just made sense what I said.
You're right. I don't see military men that aren't shaven.
Right.
Because of that.
I learned so much. I mean, that there's so much that goes on in the military that people don't know.
That civilians don't know. We're completely oblivious to it. We're just hearing other people who are probably mad about the military, but they don't give you the full story or the reasons behind, like you said, with the machine guns, how initially they said, okay, women can't because can they carry this? But then technology came in. It's like, that's not an issue now. The stick. Okay. Being able to move the stick. See, people don't know this and they will create these prejudices saying, oh, you don't want women there because they're women. But there was a reason behind it.
Yeah. Now, they did have to do some changes to the cockpits and things like that. And so one of the things is, yeah, you do have to spend some money. And people will say, well, you know, all this money we have to spend and this extra dollars. Sometimes when you want the right combination of people, you have to spend some money. We want somebody who's going to be happy being in the military. And I thought that was a really good choice. You know, I mean, used to be like, who needs to be happy? You just need to serve. I mean, that was the old way of thinking in the military, like just sign up and who cares, you know? And as the military became much more sophisticated, it was very family oriented. Now there's some, here's the other thing. There's some different military branches and each one of those branches has a whole different thought process. The Air Force, by virtue of what they do, they have the Space Command and they have a lot of technology. So the type of person that they try to attract is going to be different than the Marines. Okay, the Marines are always the first ones to go in. We want them to be rough and tough. You know, the type of person that I want to be a Marine is the kid that was on the football team, the blocker last year. That's the guy that I want recruited, that tough guy that's ready to go in and tackle somebody. I don't want that person to be, you know, the top of the class that's going to be questioning everything that somebody asked that person. So if you look at those two, you know, people, that's the type of person that each one of those services will attract, because we need that person that goes in to be a Marine, to be tough and to listen and to not question. And God bless the Marines. I'll tell you, every other service, that's what we say, God bless the Marines, because if it wasn't for them, you know, it wouldn't be safe for us, for the rest of us to go in. So we all have a great appreciation for them. And so I'm not saying anything derogatory. We'll tease each other all the time. You'll hear that. But, you know, we have a great respect for what each service does. But each service has a different mission, and they will then cater to the type of person that they will attract, just like a business. Each business has its mission. And that's another thing that people don't understand, is that each one of the services has a specialty mission, and they have different rules of the people that they're going to try to attract in. So the rules for each one of these people might be a little bit different, and that they're not the same. And so that's the thing across the board, they might be a little bit different. So when it comes to, and we'll jump on to, you know, transgender and those types of issues. We're talking medical issues. Everybody has the psychological stuff. We all go through that. Okay. No, I mean, you know, getting along, race, and there's, you know, all different races. I've met Muslims that served in the United States. You know, they're American Muslims that serve the country, and I've met them. There's also a program in the military that a lot of people aren't aware of, that you can go in the military without being an American citizen, and you can earn your American citizenship after 3 years of serving. After your third year, you can take your citizen exam and you can become an American citizen. So you can earn your way to your citizenship by serving in the United States military. And I think it's a wonderful program. More people should do it. But again, people don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And the alpha personality is appropriate for the military at certain times. What an informative first half of the show we have had here with Colonel Julie Hall. We've talked about her military career, and when we come back, we're going to talk about her political endeavors and her future. You are tuned in to After Dark with Robin Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all of the great shows. We'll be back with more from Colonel Julie Hall.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Oh, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
And we're back after dark with Robin Andrew. And our guest today is Colonel Julie Hall. And we've been talking to her about the military, and she has given us a lot of insight, things that I thought I knew that I actually didn't know. And I'm sure that you out there that are listening are probably scratching your heads also, because you thought you knew everything and you didn't know. But one of the things that I definitely want to talk about with the Colonel is this whole idea of transgenders in the military. And what does it mean for our military? And are we at risk? And what is the approach? So, Colonel, what are your thoughts?
I want to preface this that I was a hospital administrator for 30 years. So I do have a little bit of background and about how we do processing and what is considered to be a medical clearance. That's what we call it. Somebody that, you know, can be cleared to be in the military. And this is an important distinction. When we bring somebody into the military, and myself, I had to be medically cleared to come into the military. No medical problems, no medical issues. They want you to come in medically cleared. The military does not want to take on any medical concerns right from the start. That's not the military's mission. So let's start with that premise. So if you were to go with that premise, you would say that a person that is a transgender person should have already made their decision and have had their changeover prior to coming in the military, you would think, and that there shouldn't be any decision-making going on while you're in the military. So these are the kinds of discussions that are going to come up now. So the question is, well, now I'm in the military. Do I get that option to make that changeover? And I think these are the discussions that they're dealing with right now. Or, hey, I'm changing over. I never told the military. Now, normally, and we've had this happen in the past, okay, where people would do things. I mean, something that comes to mind was abortions. There were women in the military that didn't want anybody to know that they were pregnant, because at the time, if you were pregnant, you had to get out. Then the military changed and said, oh, no, you can't get out because we now just paid a lot of money. So as cultures changed and mores changed, the military changed. And so, you know, military people changed and military medicine changed and so forth. So here we are now. So what do we do now? So as we move through this, I think that they are going to have to look at it from deployability again, because the ultimate mission for the military is to be able to deploy every soldier, every airman. And deployability means you have to be able, again, to be able to go to war for a continued period of time, to be able to wear a gas mask, if you would, to be able to be able to put on this suit. Why? Because NBC, because chemical warfare is still our greatest risk right now. That's the thing that these people, you know, that China has, that, you know, these other countries have. That's what we get prepared for. I mean, of course, you know, bullets kill us. mind kill us, all those things kill us. But what really we prepare for is going to be, you know, the gases and so forth, all of those things. So you have to be able to stay alive. That's what we are preparing for. So you've got to be able to, you know, wear that gas mask. If you cannot, what I've heard from one person was, even after you, you know, get your gender change, that you have to have hormone therapy all the time. And now I've been reading some other materials that say you don't. So that's going to be the biggest conflict, I think, that's going to come with this. So the other word, in other words, if you can, you know, go and you can, and this gets to a point where it's done and, you know, you've got the change and you just go, I think it'll be fine. But if there's going to be a requirement that you have to have a continuous influx of medication, and there might be difficulty getting that medication to you if you're deployed, then there's going to be some question. I've been recently reading on some of the transgender troops in the UK. They've been deploying for years, apparently, and this has not been an issue. So as a commander, as somebody who's led troops before, that's all I care about. And I will tell you something else. As a commander, it is my responsibility to make sure that every troop, everyone, I don't care if it's male, female, I don't care about their socioeconomic status, their religious beliefs, I don't care who they sleep with at night when they go home, it is my responsibility to make sure that they are all treated fairly and equitably, every one of them. That's my mission. So I take that mission very, very seriously. And I hope that other commanders will do the same thing. But again, it's also my mission to make sure that everybody that goes out comes home safely, the best I can do. And so if there is a situation where I feel that that isn't going to be the case, I hope that these commanders that are out there right now take the priority first to make sure that if there is going to be a problem, that they do the right thing and say, hey, listen, we got to look into this a little bit closer. But again, if there isn't a problem, don't make a problem out of it.
Like you said, as long as you're able to do your job, we don't care about anything else. And there are people who are straight. They're there and they can't do their jobs.
I mean, I can tell you, when people tell me about, you know, when women go into military, I said, listen, I would take a lot more women that I've seen over some of the guys that I've seen. So, you know, don't make the pool so small that I don't get to pick from the best. If you really want the best of the best, don't limit the pool.
Right. And it's about the best of the best. Colonel, are you sure you don't want to run for office? We need minds like that out there, because there are too many people that are making this political. And like, you're not even bringing politics into it. You're just being matter of fact. This is the way it is. This is how we should look at it. Not once have you said anything about red or blue. You're just giving the facts. And that's what I appreciate. And we need more of that. Just give us the facts. That's it. None of the pontificating.
Yeah. And I'm very pragmatic from a socialist standpoint. And I give that to my military career. And thank God for my military career. It's the best thing that have happened to me from a people standpoint. And I love this country. And I think, let's segue that in. And it's because I love this country that it really disturbs me when I hear people say things like, this country is racist. And this country, because it's this flag that's behind, well, you can't see my flag, but I do have a red, white, and blue flag, okay, behind me. I love this country. I think that this country has given opportunity. And when people disrespect it, why did I even go into politics in the first place? People ask me that all the time. It really angered me, truly, when people started kneeling from the American flag, because this flag is sometimes the only thing that parents have left from their children that they do go to war. That's the only thing they get. And it means so much to them. When people disrespect that, it really bothers me. And I said, this is it. This is the flag of hope. You know, it may not be to everybody, you know, it may not mean the same thing. It may look back and say, well, you know, the country did this or the country did that. the country's, yeah, we've done a lot of things and bad things have happened. Bad things will continue to happen, but a lot of good things have happened too. And to me, this is a flag of hope. This is, to me, what gives us the opportunity to look forward and say, we can change things, because we have. We have changed things and we will continue to change things. But if we look at this and say, this is a horrible country, our children have no future, this is disgusting. And you can hear it now in our children. And to tell our children that they are less than others, I would never tell my son. My son is white and his wife is black. I would never, ever tell my child that he is less than his wife. That's a horrible thing to tell a child. So what are we telling our children? I mean, that's just, I mean, to me, again, I'm going to be pragmatic. What are you telling children? It just doesn't make any sense from a very pragmatic standpoint. So let alone as a mother, I'm angry. So there's a lot of things that internally I'm angry about, but again, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So I said, listen, I can't see this going on anymore. And I really like to change it. I do think I'm a very common sense person. But I think what's going on in this country right now is I am very angry. I know you can't hear it, but there are times that it does come out and I do get very, very angry about it. So I think the most difficult thing that I run into is that I am from Massachusetts. So I don't know, could you tell from the accent? I am from Massachusetts. I am originally from Massachusetts and I went in the military in the 70s, when I got back to Massachusetts, I thought, oh my God, what happened here? This was the place where the first shot heard around the world. This is where, in my opinion, this is where freedom began. We fought against a country that was taking away our arms. And now here I am in the state that wants to do that again. I'm like, come on, people. This is the bluest state probably in the entire country. We have not had a Republican run in this state for Congress in over a decade. And every time they run, it's very, very difficult. Wow. It's like California, I hear.
Yeah, we've had some great candidates from Massachusetts on the show already. Rayla Campbell, she joined us. She was fantastic. And Bruce Chester joined us as well. He was another enjoyable patriot from Massachusetts. Hopefully they can start electing some of these great candidates that they do have in Massachusetts. Julie, I want to go back to something you said. You talked about how you were offended as a military veteran about the athletes kneeling for the flag. You always hear people defend them, saying that the military think that they have the right to kneel for the flag because that's why they go over there to fight. So they have the freedom to kneel for the flag if they want to. But after that was going down, a lot of people were very offended. We're turning off the NFL. We're turning off sports. And President Trump and his boisterous self went off on the NFL players about it. I thought that was a very patriotic moment when President Trump did that. What were your thoughts when President Trump called out the NFL players for kneeling for the flag?
No, I thought that was great. I mean, I had that on my, I never took so much flack from people when I said, when they defended people for doing that, I said, how can you defend people for kneeling for the flag? I mean, it was unacceptable as far as I was concerned. Well, that's their right. It's like, no, it's not their right. It's not their flag. If they want to kneel, let them get their own flag. You know, you want to, I felt as though if you have something that you're upset about, get a flag and go, you know, go kneel to that. That, you know, I call it, you know, I said they are hijacking the United States flag for their own, you know, their own concern. I see it as two separate things. So yeah, I think that they were wrong in doing that. And I think that the people that are in sports right now, and I've seen it firsthand because I've watched BLM here in Massachusetts, and I'm sure Rayla talked about this a little bit, actually go and attack people to the point that they have canceled contracts and things with local vendors. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I have never, I'm 5 foot tall and I'm probably the spunkiest person in my family. And I've been told, you know, as a colonel too, that like people are afraid of you. I'm like, how could they be afraid of me? But I guess when I do get going, I am kind of scary. But, to me, it's like, how could you let people frighten you like that? But I get it. I do get it. And I have to tell people, you can't be afraid. You just can't be afraid, because that's what they want. They want you to be afraid. But I understand that they get on your Facebook and they threaten you. And I'm talking, these are real threats. And I've seen this happen. They'll show up at your house and people look at them and they say, oh, they're not doing anything wrong. I'm like, you should see and hear some of the things that get said. If you heard and saw some of the things, you would be disgusted and you would be afraid. So I've never seen the level of violence and threats and disgusting language in the suburbs. I had a rally. It wasn't even a rally. It was something that I did for the police here in Attleboro. And I live in a suburb town, okay? Two Antifa members came out and what they were doing was just disgusting. And when I talked to people about it afterwards, they wouldn't even believe me. They would not believe that happened. My friends that have known me for years and years were calling me up and telling me that I was like, what's wrong with me? It was really disheartening. And it was, you know, I was hurt that people would not believe me. And so, you know, these are the kinds of things that happened all over the country. And then, you know, then when you talk about the Trump thing, they would say, oh, Donald Trump, it's Donald Trump. That Donald Trump was controlling my mind. And I'm like thinking, are you kidding me? You know me better than that. Nobody has ever controlled my mind. And you know that. And these are the kinds of things that really bothered me, is when people would, that was their kind of fallback point, was that you must be controlled by Donald Trump. And I'm thinking, really, that's your fallback point? You're going to tell an intelligent woman like me that someone else is controlling my mind? That's ridiculous. This is what the left is doing, is telling people, oh, you know, they're kind of sloughing it off that way, is that you can't be an intelligent person. You've got, there's got to be some other reason. So I don't know. It's just very frustrating.
So Colonel, let me ask you, you being a medic, what are your thoughts on the vaccine? They're now saying that kids could take the vaccine. Before you answer that, just give everyone just a little background as to when you say medic, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah. So I actually was a behavioral health specialist for 6.5 years. I have a degree in psychology, and then I have two master's degrees. So one's in health administration and the other one's in human resource management. So I was in the medical career field my entire life, which is 30 years in, you know. So I know about medicine from a clinical standpoint because of the behavioral health. So I never really actually did, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, but I know about medicine because, you know, when you're in the hospital, you sit down with the doctors and nurses. In the military, it's different than it is in the civilian world. We work as a team all the time. The administrators, the nurses, the doctors, every morning we sit down and we talk about what's going on together. So if there's something medically going on in the hospital, I need to know about it because I have to go out and get the money or, you know, change up some of the logistics to get the supplies that they need. If I don't know what this medical term means, then I can't get the right supplies. So over the years of experience, I've learned, you know, what these medical terms mean and so forth and so on. And thankfully so, we have that kind of relationship. So that's what I mean by that. So I don't want people to think that I'm a doctor or nurse or something of that sort. But I did a lot of the processing and the paperwork, probably more public health kind of things. I do understand a lot more. So when it talks about vaccines, I was around when the first level of SARS came through. This is not the first time we've seen SARS. It's come through before. And I've been to foreign countries before where Americans are not immunized for certain types of vaccines. And I've had two of our Americans die because they got what's called hemorrhagic fever, which we are not immunized for, and they caught it and they died because of it. So we go to different countries and hopefully we get the vaccines that we need. But if we don't, then it could be disastrous for us. As you know, some of the military people also just recently were given anthrax to be prepared to go deploy. So a lot of the military people were very skeptical about getting this vaccine because they've already gotten anthrax. The other thing is military people get a lot of vaccines and they don't even know what they've gotten. You're going to learn another secret about the military. So when you go into the military, you go through a line and they give you shots in your arm and you don't even know what you're getting. You have no idea. So military people by nature are very skeptical about getting any kind of vaccines or any kind of shots because we've had multiple numbers of them. And there's always been a kind of urban legend, if you would, that military people have been used as guinea pigs to do research. So don't expect a big jump from the military people to get any kind of vaccines. And that's the reason why. And it may, like I said, it may be not following science or whatever people say, which is again, another issue with me, following science. Which science? I don't know which science is the right science because everybody's said something different. So
yeah, we're coming up on the end of the hour, but something else I wanted to ask Julia about: China being held accountable for COVID-19. You mentioned earlier that some of your biggest concerns for the future are biological and chemical weapon attacks. We're hearing a lot now about how this Wuhan virus came from the Wuhan lab and it was made in a lab in China. How do you think the world should hold China accountable for the millions of lives lost for their negligence?
I've heard this go back and forth, and I'm not real sure if that's the case, if it was actually made or if truly did come from, you know, an animal species. A lot of these things do come from animal species. I've seen it more in the past that it does come from animals. And I know that the last SARS did too, and avian flu did. So I'm not quite sure. I don't know if it's a conspiracy theory. I don't know. All right. I'm still not convinced yet. And if somebody can really show me proof that that has happened that way, you know, yes, they'd have to be held accountable. I know that we are told that, you know, that everybody has some kind of biological. I can guarantee you that China has some kind of biological, definitely has a biological product, as does every other country out there. So, I mean, if they were testing it on us, I don't know. It's perplexing to me. The difficulty is, with so many conspiracy theories out there and so many different things that happen and the media getting involved, we're never going to know the truth. And I think that's the most disturbing thing of all of this. Nobody is ever going to know what the truth is, even if it hit us in the face. And that's, I think, the most frightening thing of all of this. How do we determine the truth anymore? I don't know.
Because as they say, the truth is out there, but where is the truth? And you have the media that keeps coming in with their own spin, their own narrative, trying to put out there what they want out there. I mean, as we see right now, earlier on when Trump was saying, we need to really look at this, maybe it came from China, not from a Wuhan lab. And the media just obliterated him. He's lying, he's this, he's that. And now they're having to backtrack. Do you view the media as being a threat to society, to our country, to the military, with the different spins that they have on different stories?
Absolutely. Absolutely. He who controls the communications, I used to say this in the military all the time, he who controls the communications controls the world. If you think about it, when I went in to my every office, every organization, the first thing I tried to do was start a distribution list because I wanted to control the communications, because I knew that if you control the communications, then you control everything that goes on in the organization.
Colonel Hall, we're coming up on the end of the show here. You want to update the audience on what some of your plans are for the future and some of the Massachusetts Patriots out there, if they want to support you or stay in touch with you and see what's going on, where's the best spot they could do that at?
Sure, that would be great. Right now, I still have my Facebook open, and as that a lot of people in Massachusetts do, where we wait for the right moment to attack. I guess that's my military experience. So I do have a Facebook, and it's Julie Hall for Congress, and it's at, let's make sure I get this right, Hall for Congress, 2022. That's the best place to do it right now. I'm updating my website, and that is also Hall for Congress 2022. So that's one place to find me. So I said right now I'm still up. I'm still put a lot of stuff on Facebook. Most of it's educational. I think that's what's really important. I try to educate people. How do you find the truth? I want to give you information on how to find the truth. One of the things I tell people, don't listen or come to your conclusion because I told you to or anybody else told you to. What I will put out there is places and sources to find those answers. Read and make your own decisions. That's the best advice that I can give you. And I will put information out there for you. Again, keep your eyes open. You'll know when I make an announcement to run. Right now, I think most of you know that money is a very, very big issue here in this district. The seat is pretty much a bought seat. You need a lot of money to get this seat. The people that own this seat have a lot of money, and it will continue to be that way, unfortunately. So we'll see what happens if they get an opponent. That's going to be a little bit easier because some of the money will be drawn away. If the money gets drawn away, it'll be a whole lot easier for me to run. And that's what I'm waiting for. So that's it. And I will continue to be out there. One of the things I am doing now is I am helping other candidates run in the area. I've run a lot of races. I have a lot of experience doing that. So I'm reaching out and reaching down, and we're going to try to see if we can get some other good candidates to run and get elected. I'm happy to do that. So if you are one of those people, and you said, hey, listen, I don't know if I want to run. I don't know how to do this. Nobody's helping me. You call me and I will help you run. I'm going to actually give you my personal email, and it's juliehall.us@gmail.com. Please get in touch with me and I will help you. I don't want you to be one of those people out there that says there's nobody helping us. I'm here to help.
Well, fantastic, Colonel Hall. I know I speak for Rob and I when we say that we would love to see you run for office again in 2022. And we need more people like you who are pragmatic, not just a partisan who just say whatever the talking point is at the time. Julie Hall's a great pragmatic person, and I think she would do a fantastic job in Congress in 2023. Thank you all for joining us tonight on another episode of After Dark with Rob and Andrew on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher, or head on over to the website americaoutloud.com. We will see you guys next time, and remember to stand for something or you will fall for nothing.